Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say, no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Okay, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sunday Podcast. Apologies, we are one day late, but Matt and I wanted to make sure we'd had time to fully check through these results, watch back some of the races, and make sure we get our teeth stuck into this one without rushing around. So thank you for waiting. But mate, Eurocross yesterday, firstly, well done to you, mate. Pleased with your athletes' results?
Yeah, I actually am very pleased, because, you know, I think both of them, when we got a look on the course and we saw the course ball, so the race distance as well, it was like, oh, like, just not ideal. I guess their strengths would be on, if you were to design a course which would have suited them, it would look very, very different. So actually, I think they both performed very well. So I am pretty happy.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Obviously, yeah, first time out in a GB vest for both of them. Hey, what did you think of the course? Obviously, watching it yesterday, I thought it looked great, to be honest. I really enjoyed the purpose made aspect of it. I don't think you want something like that every single year, but I thought it looked really smart. It looked really professional. I thought it was the sort of thing, if you tuned in or you passed by that course and you didn't really know cross country so much, you'd be like, that looks pretty cool. Like, whatever's going on there, that looks proper. And I think it's a really good advert for, I guess, a bit of the modernization of cross country, rather than it being this like massive field or massive loop with a few people slogging around on it. It just made it look really fast.
Yeah, I'll just by the way, it wasn't Rebecca's first GB vest. She's had a couple before that, but back to the course.
Apologies, mate.
I know what you're saying. I actually had a couple people message me and just say, and they don't really watch running, and they sort of said, you know, it's, you know, they it was very aesthetically pleasing, especially some of those overhead shots when you had people weaving all around those turns. And, you know, I think, you know, they said it was quite, yeah, it was an enjoyable watch, had, you know, beauty in its own way. Some of the words they used, I actually disagree with you. I thought, you know, yeah, it had its demands. Like, all cross country races need to have like a real sort of key point of the race where you really need to work hard, like a challenge in the course. And I think the overall challenge in this course was just the fact it was so twisty and so turny. And I think that just took such a toll on a lot of people out there. A lot of people were really finding it hard that last lap. I mean, even Gressier, you could just see early on, this is a guy who's phenomenal over the country. You could see early on he was coping, you know, he was able to cope with those turns. On the last lap, he looked really worse for wear on some of those turns. And you could just see all his cadence, and he was just struggling. And Deacon
is that
and
a
I,
good thing, though? Is that?
No. I'm saying it is a good thing. But I think for me, I think you've, like, I hate when I see artificial sort of courses and like just get it on flipping grass. Like, it's cross country at the end of the day. No, genuinely, it is cross country. And I even thought, I saw someone say they were on about wearing super shoes, and I'm like, well, where are we at now? Like, if people are debating, there's actually a debate about super shoes. I mean, it was that firm and that compact. You know, Cram on commentary described it as, he said, you know, it was so firm, it was almost like concrete in some parts. Mm. Like, that's how he described it in commentary. And, you know, the poor people who went, I think it'd be Megan Keith fell down, right? And so I actually disagree with that. I think the course was fine, but I disagree with the fact it was just so firm. I just don't think that's cross country. I guess that's my opinion.
Yeah. I guess there's an element, though, that they can only...
Like, there's firm grass, and then there's that.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't even tried. That's just not even grass.
Yeah. No. I feel you there. I'm interested to know, I don't know if I missed this on commentary, I don't know if they said what they're going to do with it now. Like, are people going to be able to run around there? Is it going to be a park? What's
Oh, but don't get me wrong, it looked lovely. If I was to do a little, you know, 5K trot in the morning, dream place to
Do a little shakeout, yeah.
To do a little shakeout and jog round. But yeah, I didn't think it was very cross-country-esque, to be honest. But that being said, it was still a bloody hard course. And you could see that, you know, it was what it was doing to me was absolutely sapping people. So I kind of give it respect in that way. But I also
it was a nice change. It was cool. Like, I think it, obviously, look, it's a Portuguese cross country race. So it's never going to be like sloppy mud. But yeah, I do appreciate what you're saying. But I think, yeah, like you say, having people reach out that aren't necessarily like, don't watch every single cross country race.
Did look good on TV.
Yeah, look good on TV. It's a good advert for the sport. Yeah, and some of those drone shots. It was like Formula One-esque, if you like.
Yeah, I've got no complaints with the twists and the turns, and the way the course was designed, I thought was really cool, interesting, and it was a lot hillier than probably we even saw on TV as well. You could tell there was some
when they went down and from the bottom of the hill, you actually saw you appreciated some of the
that running was largely downhill and stuff like that. So no, I've got no complaints there. For me, it was just what they were actually running on the surface they were running on. I was like, well, that's not even cross country really. And also, I've always had a complaint about the distances, and even, you know, Paul and Cram bringing that up again, just saying like, come on, 7.5K really for senior men and women, under 26K really, you know, make it a little longer. But there we go, because I just think like 22 minutes of running, I mean, that is just on the men's side, that's what they wanted, right? 22 Bataclan's 24 as well. It's just not very long. But let's get into the races. Also, from a spectator point. It was a spectator point when you were there. It looked like they couldn't move. It looked like they were trapped. Wherever you decided to watch that race, because obviously they had these like fences all the way around the course and sort of flower beds and stuff either side, it looked like you just wouldn't have been able to see any other parts of the course because you just couldn't get across. You were kind of stuck where you were. So I think that would have been very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Obviously, you mentioned before we start recording today, and yeah, I think it's one that looks like it should be good for spectators there on the ground. But yeah, if you can't move, although you do get to see them five times.
Well, senior races you do, but
yeah, absolutely, mate. Yeah, like you say, let's get into the races. We'll start with our senior men's. You mentioned Gracia struggling with the turns. Fabulous race for first, and also a fabulous race for third as well. And Deacon Wanyanu obviously coming out on top, and it's a weird one. Gracia sort of gave up right at the end, but he was well beaten, I think, before his stumble. I think the Spaniard just looked so strong, and Gracia tried to go past him so many times, kind of down towards the final turn. And it's like, if you don't get past then, are you ever going to get around him? And then he had a little stumble around the last turn before kind of giving up. And yeah, it's a great race from them two, and they pulled away pretty early on in the race, and then we're just kind of going back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah, I want, like, obviously Beattie sort of stumbled as well, and I think a few people stumbled, and I just wonder if the ground on that last like 50 meters straight, it looked like the grass just been put down. It was testing for them, that's for sure. A few people were struggling in that last bit just to stay on their feet. Look, credit to Gracia, because he really took this race on. And I think he wanted to outrun Thierry, didn't he? And this is what I'm saying, like, what, 7.5K just wasn't at that level. It's just not enough for these boys to really grind people down. And he did it early enough. What was it, lap two or end of lap one or lap two that he started to press? And they just sort of pulled themselves away, and they showed their class, I guess. You know, they showed, you know, these boys are your low 12:50 runners, you know, featuring Gracia is obviously world champion. And, you know, I think the way they weave around there. And then there was that battle for third, which was very interesting, which is a large pack. And Scott Beattie did a phenomenal draw. I mean, it did. At one point, I was like, he's definitely beating Labarly there. But obviously, photo finish says otherwise, which is unfortunate for him. But he, credit to Beattie, he actually did a lot. He was responsible for that pack getting smaller and smaller. Yeah. Whenever we saw glimpses of the camera, he was right at the head of it. He was pushing things on. He wasn't just a participant amongst the 10 or 8 or 5 in that chase pack. He was one who was really forcing things along when he could. And I think in his post-race interview, he even alluded to the fact and kind of even speaking from the couple athletes I had do this, there were just so many periods in this race where you felt great and then you felt awful, and you felt great and you felt awful. And I think there was a real inconsistent theme to how you felt during this race. You just, there was no rhythm. And I think that's what happens when you can't get a rhythm. And you know, there's periods where you're like, I am absolutely redlining. And I think there was periods where they were like, okay, I can actually move now. And on those periods, BT clearly woke up and got stuck in, which is, yeah, credit to him.
Yeah, I think it was a phenomenal performance from BT, and he'll be gutted, obviously, not to get the bronze, being so close to Lobalu there. But like, I don't think, we certainly didn't expect any Brits to feature that high up, and I think it's a real, real strong marker. And we mentioned before we start recording, look, you go back to his 5K time that he ran in February. If you look at all the guys towards the top of this race, they've run quick on the track over 5,000.
Yeah, and that's, and I guess that's, it was a 5,000 meter race. And I think, you know, those who can operate very well over 5K,
just turnover at that pace,
would have performed. Yeah. I think turnover. I think also, you know, you need the power to, there were a lot of sort of shorter hills as well. You need the power to just be able to fire yourself up those and take the accelerate coming out of those turns as well. So I think it obviously did lend itself to those who are a little stronger over the 5K. And I think that for me, that shone through as well in throughout the whole Euro cross country event. You know, you look at the under 20 race. I mean, obviously Ian is hands down the best 5K runner in that age group. On the men's side, you had that Belgian guy Renders, who was, he's a pretty cool talent. He had the best 5K by a long shot in that race. He won that race only just, but he won that race. Nick Griggs made it look extremely easy. Ferrero of Spain obviously won the Euro under 23s. Griggs just absolutely destroyed it. He looked very good in the under 23 race. And then of course you had Battaglietti, Megan Keith. And then on the men's side, you had the two men who have broken 12:50 in Gressier and Thierry in Di Cominaia. And so throughout the whole Eurocross, and I guess you could argue that, look, yeah, if you're a good 5K runner, you're also a very, very good cross-country runner. And they probably still would have won, whatever the course, they still would have won. But I think it obviously lent itself much closer to a 5K yesterday than it did anything else. Like, anyone with any other strengths was unable to really get the best out of themselves.
Yeah, I do think, and it goes back to what you said about the firm ground. That's always a good starting point for the track guys, isn't it? And it lets them run with their natural gait. Whereas when it's muddy, when it's sloppy, it certainly doesn't. I guess someone that punched a bit above his weight, Jack O'Leary of Ireland, fifth place behind BT, 13:22 guy, but that is a outstanding run. And at one point, it looked like he might even get the bronze in having a bit of a battle with Lobalu and BT not long before the finish. But yeah, just run out of it in the end. And obviously the Irish team as well, second place, I think they were, four guys in the top 20. It's crazy, crazy depth.
Yeah, and this is what, you know, and interestingly, this is why Gressier was there. Said he wanted to help his team. And they genuinely thought their team could win. Mm-hmm. And he obviously thought he could win as well. And I think, you know, all of the Irish teams actually performed really well. I mean, they had good presence in throughout all the races. And obviously as capped off, I think that's their first senior men's medal ever, which, you know, credit to them for achieving that. And I think from my side, it looks like it's coming from not just the athletes, but also above. Like, Irish athletics are like, Eurocross is a fantastic opportunity for us. We want to go there and we want to be the best in Europe. Like, they've probably have some sort of pathway mapped out where they win these European team titles. And on that men's side, they're obviously very, very close. And perhaps on a different day, a slightly different course, they might have got the best out of Brian Fay, Dara as well. But obviously, yeah, Jack O'Leary's had one hell of a day, and he is a class developing Irish athlete. I mean, I think Emmett is coaching him as well. And yeah, he actually quite opposite to BT, looked like he paced it a lot more strategically, like was a little further back. And then I say, you know, he wasn't too far down the field, but he did work through and worked into that fifth spot, whereas BT, you know, yeah, was just on it from the get-go and was never, I mean, even on the first lap, I mean, actually, out of all the guys who featured, I swear BT was just like the highest up on that first half a lap or so. He's right up there, third, fourth. And so, yeah, he just really got after it.
He did. And that's the thing.
Pay respect to that.
Watching it, I was a bit concerned for him. I was like, fair play for going with it. But that's a tough way to get yourself in and amongst it. But yeah, an absolutely fair play to BT. Like,
but this is what
race to him.
But this is where, you know, I hope someone like BT looks at it and goes, look, I was fourth this year. Where can I come? Where can I come next year? Where can I come the year after? You know, do you remember when
look at the confidence Rory's had this year?
Yeah. I mean, do you remember when Farrell was, I mean, BT's, is he 27, 26? But do you remember when Farrell was?
Yeah, 27, I think.
2007, you know, Farrell was obviously, he was qualifying for the World Championships. He was on the cusp of making finals. And he was so dialed in on, like, you know, the one, the sort of monkey on his back was the Eurocross. He had to try and win it. He had a couple of attempts where he got second, where he got third. And then that year, you know, he obviously went to Eurocross and he won it, and it was in Brussels that time. But, you know, he was patient and he gave it a few cracks. Then once he won it, I don't think we saw him again. We might have seen him once more, but, you know, that was kind of it then. He was off to other things, but he just wanted to get that done and get that over the line, because I think it does show you, you know, you have, once you can medal and win a Eurocross, you have the potential to be a, you know, one of the best in the world.
Mm.
You've got those foundations there. And so it would be, you know, I think if you're BT, you kind of look at that, and it's easy to get quite distracted through other parts of the year. But, you know, this is a race where, you know, in contrast, when you look at trying to win a European 5K, I mean,
or even trying to make a Worlds.
I mean, even trying to make a Worlds, yeah, is extremely, you know, you look at it and you go, well, you know, fourth, basically third today. Basically, he was on the podium today.
But would you rather get a medal at Eurocross, or would you rather, like, just run round at the
qualify
back
for
of
world
the 5,000 in a World
Champs? Qualify for World Champs, yeah. And as kind of the question, yeah. And will the boys go to World Cross? You know, this, I mean, that was from BT. I mean, surely, I mean, that's an auto for World Cross for him. And yeah, I think it would be good to see him there. I think obviously as well, he'll be thinking.
He's done over there for indoor. That's the thing. He's done his.
Well, I mean, look, you know, your perfect setup would be World Cross.
Yeah.
And then you would go for a camp for a month, and then you would hit a Boston 5K. Yeah. I mean, that would probably be the ideal setup. It's not going to get better than that. So yeah. What an opportunity these boys have.
Mm-hmm.
Rory where was Rory? 16th? I think 17th. Top 12 was like a lock, but, you know, you presume that he'll want to go to World Cross. I mean, I'm so intrigued to see these World Cross selections. They'll be out on Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah, they will. I think they pick Rory off that.
Hey, we'll pick Rory off that. Yeah,
that's probably it though.
What? No, they pick four. I think they'll pick four.
Okay.
I think they'll pick four. I think they'll pick four men and four women. I just think.
Anyone who's not here though, as in like, I'm not, yeah, I'm saying of the guys who've competed just there.
Nah.
I think they pick Scott, Rory, and then they maybe look elsewhere for the other two.
No. I think they possibly pick the top four that were that finished yesterday.
Okay.
You know, I think they could
Jacob
pick
29th. And let's have a look. Joe
Hudson. Slade was just behind him. You know, I think they pick out of those guys, you know, I'm not sure how they would justify anyone else unless it was literally Emil Caress or someone like that. I've heard Emil's doing Valencia. I've heard that's what he wants to do. So, you know, and I think there will be a lot of people who will want to do Valencia, which is what, the week after? Or the same. I think Valencia is the same weekend, actually. I think it's the, yeah, I think it's at, there's actually a clash. What a feast. We're going to have World Cross on a Saturday and Valencia on a Sunday. Just double checking the date, mate. Yeah, Valencia's on a Sunday. I think there are. So, like you said, anyone who hasn't done cross country, I think, it's because they're preparing for Valencia or something else, or a half marathon or a marathon. So actually, I feel like British Athletics won't have anyone else to bring into the fold, because I don't think that those people would have expressed their interest to run the World Cross.
Perhaps not.
So anyway, just back to Gressier and his movements. I think he got a little bit unlucky with the fact, I think, Indigma and I was so strong. Gressier clearly had to make so many moves throughout the race as well. He just had to keep this constant pressure on. He could never quite settle. And, you know, I almost think as well, did he disrespect Indigma and I a little bit? Like, did he just try and did he think it was going to be an easier job to run away from that man? I mean, you know, looking back, I bet he's like, I should have been as patient as ever, and I probably could have outkicked this guy. You know, but the reason he couldn't outkick him was just he was pretty much dead on his feet.
Mm.
had a bad position going into the last few turns as well. Had to go wide on those last few turns. So Ndidi Koumenaye had him really by the time he sort of hit the front on that long downhill stretch. And yeah, I think Grecia does win that if he runs that race a different way. But that's why we kind of love him, because he does always give us an interesting watch.
Yeah. And I said it in the preview, right? I think that he comes in, he's a showman as it is, but you come in as a 10,000 meter world champion and then you feel like you have to put on a show and you have to
do
run
something.
Away.
You've got to make it happen.
Like you can't just win this by doing, I guess, a sensible thing and sitting in and then out kicking in with maybe 400 to go, right? Instead, he thinks, yeah, I'm going to hit the front after the first lap. I'm then going to start putting in surges. I'm then going to try and run away from the field because I'm the world champ. But it doesn't work like that. And it's we've seen it time and time again with people on the track. We saw it with Whiteman, Commonwealth Games. Jeremy tried to absolutely take it on after his world champs win. And I think he admitted in that. He was like, yeah, I felt a bit of pressure to
do something. Yeah.
Yeah, to win it from the front in dominant fashion rather than just winning it in the way that you've learned how to win.
Mm, without a doubt. No, I think also we have got to credit Ndidi Koumenaye because he's been a bit of a nearly man recently. You know, he's had some good world crosses. He's placed in the top 10 there, last couple of world crosses. He was obviously third on the track over a 10K. Sort of, he's always in the finals. He's always there or thereabouts. Where was he last year at the Eurocross? Was he third at Eurocross last year even? So for him to come away and win this is big. That's going to catapult his career as well. So looking forward to it. And obviously he's an absolute, he had a great year. He had 12:47 and sub 27 minutes for 10. He is a stud in his own right. Credit to him.
Yeah, and hopefully we see him at World Cross, right? And see,
I just want to say, yeah,
how
I just
want to, the European can get.
Yeah. And I want to say one thing about Ndidi Koumenaye, which no one else would have had the experience of cross country that he had this year. You look at the type of races he's done, right? On the 9th of November, raced across in Spain. On the 16th of November, raced across in Spain. On the 23rd of November, raced across in Spain. On the 30th of November, raced across country in Spain. In each one, you know, these were gold label cross country races. He's finished 4th, 5th, 3rd, 2nd, and 5th. And he's raced every single weekend in Spain. And the average time of these cross country races, 22.
Yeah.
You know, 22 minutes. And what's crazy, he wins the European cross country.
On firm ground, I imagine, as well.
He wins the European, yeah, on very firm ground. And he wins the European cross country at 22 minutes and 5 seconds. There was nobody more prepared for that course and that race than Thierry Ndidi Koumenaye. So credit to him. And who knew that Spain did four gold label races one week after each other? I mean, that is just, I mean, we kind of did know, but there's a huge advantage they have. And I think. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll move on to Megan Keith, because that's second place from her. And you kind of look at it and you're like, well, yeah, that's the obvious result. You know, she is better than Can and on any surface, but it's always a hard, you know, it's always a hard fought battle. You can't count her out, but she's just not quite on Battaglessi's level yet. And so it was a second place for her. But I think, you know, she obviously opted to just sharpen up a little bit and get
over a chance, I think, of having a go at Battaglessi rather than assuming I'll just go and get second.
Yeah. And to be comfortable, because actually, when you look at Megan, you're like, that course is not, again, you know, I said there's a lot of sort of cross-country specialist, strength-orientated people who that was not their course yesterday. For Megan, that was not her course either. And so to actually still deliver on a course that doesn't really suit you, I think she'll be very, very pleased with.
Yeah. As much as she's run quick on the track, I think the leveler for Hervey Battaglessi would certainly be something muddier, something longer, something hillier. And that's what would give her a chance. And yeah, I think great result for her. She looked happy with it as well, which is good to see, because you're never sure sometimes when these athletes come through in second place. Obviously, look, you saw Grecia, no celebration whatsoever. But Megan Keith, big smile on her face as she comes across the line. It was similar in the under-20s race as well. Pretty close as well. Oscar Gatan nearly won it, and then he lost out to Renders right at the end again. But then he looked pretty happy himself. So I was like, oh, okay, that's all right then, because you kind of feel for these athletes. But yeah, Megan Keith looked happy, didn't she? And it was a good result for her, a good result. But I think, like you say, that the next step for her is going and winning this thing.
Yeah, and I do a different course that it gets a lot closer for sure. But yeah, it was a good run. And don't forget, you know, Megan Keith did she's a couple of years younger than Bazzaglietti anyway, but she did fall over at the start, and that's just not ideal. That's just not ideal. You know, it took her a while to then get up there, and it would have taken something. It would have taken the edge off for sure. And so to still come away with second is good. You know, what was she, 15 seconds behind Bazzaglietti, and had she not fallen, maybe that's more like 10, and she can take real confidence from that, being sort of 10, 15 seconds within basically the best runner bar one lady in the world over 5 and 10. Yeah, good strong running. Look, Belgium swept the team. They were phenomenal. I mean, 4th, 5th and 7th. I mean, Chloe Herbier coming 7th at Eurocross a week after Valencia Marathon. I mean, that probably is one running 220 out there. That's probably one of the results of the weekend. It's unbelievable.
Well, you said on the preview, didn't you? You said, yes, yeah, she won't be there.
Yeah, I was like, how is she going to beat it? But there you go. Phoebe Anderson, 16th for us. And then Verity Okkenden, interestingly, coming into the team for Donnelly, third scorer, 21st. The importance of reserves, hey? And we've seen this the last couple of years. The reserves have, like, obviously last year, and, last year they just had 5 men in the end, didn't they, with the BT passport problem. And she didn't call on their reserves, but... You know, this year, the reserves.
It was too late.
It was too late, maybe, yeah. The reserves do get used, you know, so it is worth, you know, hanging in there for that 7th spot on the trial.
But I guess this is where some of the debate comes in with Okkenden. And I'm not suggesting that you take Megan Keith out of this, but Okkenden was only a reserve because people are like, because Megan Keith's come in as a wild card. She was in the top 6.
Yeah.
And it's tough. But I just think you've got to make him all run the trial. I'm not suggesting Megan Keith wouldn't make the team. I just think you've just all got to run it still.
Yeah. No, I agree. What's crazy, though, is the, you know, and we see this in a couple of the other races as well, but a minute behind Bazzaglietti, it was 14th. And the women's race, it was just insanely strung out.
Going back to the course, I think because it's so narrow, though, once you are...
People file in early, don't they?
Down the field. I think you might be running the same pace, but like you're way down. And then when you gradually start running slower, you're not latching onto anything and it does really string out.
That's a good... Yeah. That was the problem with all those turns. You couldn't latch onto people, like you say. There was no opportunity just to sort of draft and settle. It was basically just like constantly just getting yourself to a turn, like throwing yourself on it, coming off. Yeah. And there were some real big gaps opening up. Really big. And even on the men's side.
I enjoyed that as a spectator.
Yeah. And then Poppy Tank just behind Okkenden in 22nd. And then we had Hughes and team captain, by the way. Congrats to Izzy Fry. Team captain, Izzy Fry, which she probably won't be... hugely, she won't be that delighted with. But again, you know, she's had a short cross season. And I think, you know, people who, you needed to be very, very prepared for that course today. I think in previous, like someone like Fry can rely on one, her strength, you know, now she's been coming back, but also just her really strong cross country background means, you know, 9 times out of 10, she can do it over most cross courses.
I was thinking
that one was a 5K and you needed to be in, you know, really top end shape to perform.
Because unless you're Megan Keith, you put so much into Liverpool. It's such a big, not just like the race, but like the event itself. Like everyone gets quite hyped for Liverpool and that's what they're thinking about at the start of the cross season. Like most athletes, right? Unless you're a Megan Keith and you know you're that good that you can just think about Eurocross, coming as soon as the track season finishes, you're thinking, yeah, that's Liverpool weekend. That's when I'm going to make the Eurocross team. And they put so much into that. That the Eurocross is almost a bit of an afterthought. And that's no criticism to them. I think it's shows the standard of the race and it shows how highly it's regarded by means these athletes put a lot into that race and to come back. I think this year better than others. Obviously, yeah, they had 3 weeks, so a bit more they do put a lot into Liverpool.
You have to, and it's credit to how competitive our championship is, I guess. So that was a senior women's race. Mixed relay was a bloody great watch. Kim McPhillips, probably the worst man in negotiating those turns and mounds and everything that caused her at him. Plus,
when we were previewing, I was thinking, McPhillips is in there. What a strong team. And the Liverpool respect him. I did think back to the pod we recorded with him though, and his performances are so like driven by his technique work.
Finesse, yeah, it was everything.
It just doesn't allow you to do that, does it? It doesn't allow you to do that. I was watching him him nearly fall over off the turns, and I'm thinking about him talking through his sprint mechanics testing.
Yeah, I was
like,
this is a guy who's locking in on the last 100 where his feet are placing, and like he's just having...
So yeah, he looked like he wasn't enjoying it out there, but yeah.
Someone needs to make a highlight reel of Kian McPhillips' lap, because there were just multiple occasions where he was just having a disaster, and then obviously just absolutely clatters the poor girl he was handing over. Yeah. Mind you, that's on her. She needed to see him like hit that check mark of 30 meters out, and she needed to get going, like proper sprint changeover. You got a 1:42.08 800 meter guy hammering towards you. You can't just stand there and wait for the baton. So yeah, probably Ireland will be working on their changeovers next year. Look, GB, top performance. You know, we had a few big legs in there. Higgins, Dixon, Ava Lloyd, and then obviously Elson on the last leg. He actually ran that really smartly. You know, there's a point where I was like, oh, he's gone off too slow here. He's going to let too many men get into the fold. But they had to work back to him on what was a very twisty, it was mostly uphill as well, that sort of middle section of the lap. And that's where they had to do all their hard running. And then, you know, once he sort of could get moving again on that long downhill and he'd been patient enough, he could then respond and hold people off. You know, the only man he didn't hold off was the world 1500 meter champion. And to be fair, I mean, at one point I thought Elson's going to out kick him. he's going to come at him with a better last 100.
He did fly off mine, didn't he, Nader? Like he absolutely...
Oh, he closed a big gap, of course. Yeah. But you know, Elson was there just sort of racing for the medal. And I thought he did that very well on the last lap, in credit to him, and obviously all the others put him in that position. That was the relay, and then we had the two under 23 races, and the women's race reminded me a lot of the under 23 women's race reminded me a lot of what we saw in the senior women's race, which is like Batticoletti and Keith just sort of pulling away and forcing things, and Ferrero Manonan did that, and again, you know, they did go clear. And in the under 23 men's race, I mean, yeah, I just thought, you know, Nick Griggs was just class. Obviously, Barnico finishing a little further down. We know his preparations haven't been great. And he actually...
Yeah, Matt Ramsden, though, sixth place. I thought it was a solid running from the Brit.
He looked unreal. There were points where I was like, he might get a medal because they were coming back. He looked really,
well, he was
really
only
good.
3 seconds behind Booty of France.
Yeah, but again, under 23 men, 17 minutes. But yeah, Ramsden will be chuffed. I mean, he's taken the scalp of Nielsen there, who's what, a 3:29, 3:30 guy? The Dutchman, 8:20 steeply. Fantastic. What, 13:15, 5K boy? Ramsden will be very, very happy with that. And I think, you know, kicking with those guys, Lelesso of Denmark, you know, also training in with Laos's group, huge run. And it shows Ramsden is in very good shape over a 5K. So hopefully we see him.
Certainly is. And yeah, women's under 20s, no surprise in there. Innes absolutely dominates it by, 30 seconds. Takes a race by the scruff of the neck pretty early on as well. And I can't wait till she starts competing in these more senior races. I do think these are good for her in that, like, she's obviously gone to the world champs in the summer, had a great experience, but it's not in and around the medals. So you can come to your own age group and show, no, you are like, you are a cut above the rest, regardless of where you're coming on a senior stage. So it's good for her to be able to come back to that and just like remind herself of winning and how good she is. But I can't wait to see her kind of take on some of the women. I mean, even just, I think what next year she'll be doing in Liverpool, she'll be obviously cutting off, but if they do the same thing, right? The 23s would be...
I'm not sure they'll do that again.
Okay, but if they do, I can just see Innes being miles ahead of the whole race before she pulls off.
Yeah.
Because I think we'll she'd see. Be in with a shout of being right up there in that senior women's race. So
if Innes wants to do the World Cross Country Championships, I think they should take her. I think it'd be great to see her in that senior race at the World Cross Country Championships, for sure. You know, she can just do it on... She can run on all courses as well. I think that's what's impressive about Innes. It's like she can run in the really thick, boggy mud, at least against people on her, you know, her own age.
Yeah.
How she fares against seniors, time will tell, but she can run over all courses, and so can Nick Griggs. And that's why I was impressed with Griggs, because I'm like, mate, this guy's just consistently been there. You know, Dublin, muddy and boggy. Brussels, muddy and boggy. He's there. You know, the Irish champs, he got second at Brian Fay. That was horrendous. It was horrendous. It was Parliament Hill-esque. Yeah. And then he's here, obviously just ripping over like a, you know, a concrete go-kart circuit. credit to Griggs, man. He is formidable. And same with Fitzgerald, obviously, class above. Emma Hickey of Ireland was third in that race, 16 years of age.
Mm.
Our 16-year-old Beth Lewis was 12th. 22nd of September 2009. Fucking hell. God.
We're getting too old, mate.
I mean, Innes has obviously felt like she's been in the under-20 age group for ages. She's finally going to graduate from the under-20s next year. But, I mean, Beth Lewis is going to be the same. She's going to have 4 years ahead of her now. 4 years from now. Ridiculous. Anyway, that's pretty much it from Eurocross. Another fantastic day of racing, that's for sure. And I think there's a lot of athletes in our teams now who we're hopefully going to see really kick on. And we'll await those Worlds Cross Country selections. The other thing to look forward to on Friday is Friday night under lights, mate, Bazzy Park. I mean, I've been exchanging messages with the race director, Keith Schofield. Let's have a look at some of the names on the list. Jake Wyman, Jack Kavanagh, James Kingston, Joe Wigfield, Floyd Grierson, Anton Butler, James McMurray's in there, Jake Barraclough, for the YouTube fans amongst us. Valencia didn't go his way. Some of the leaders. And then just looking at the women's, I think they're the course records for the women's, not, yeah. Oh yeah, no, Evie Locke, Lucy Reed, Naomi Taskowitz, and Annabelle Gomo on a women's race at the moment. But yeah, it was Telford yesterday, and Telford 10K, some good results coming out of that, but this is Eurocross preview, so Eurocross review, so we will leave it there. Look out for Friday Night Under Lights. It's going to be a great race on Friday to cap off the year. And then there's one more, isn't there? There's one more on New Year's Eve, which I've heard whispers of some big names getting involved into as well. And everyone will be hunting down. You know, we talk about Ramsden. I'm sure he will be there. Everyone hunting down a 5K PB to crown off the year.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Thanks for listening, guys. Catch you very, very soon.